You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Want a drink?
I never drink.
Ah.
No one in my family ever drinks.
That's great. You probably never run out of ice your whole life.
I don't drink because drinking affects your decision making.
You may be right. I can't decide. That's just a little humour. Where's the rest of this moose?
Arthur, I think it's time we got to know one another.
I do too. That's why I had you come over today. This is a tough room. I don't have to tell you that. You must have hated this moose.
Why don't you forget the moose for a moment?
Right.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Washman's got a knife!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 130 for the 7th of May, 2001. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Good. That was a great clip, by
That's
the way.
That's a great clip. That's from the original 1981 Arthur. And for those who are wondering why I'm playing Arthur is because in our What We've Been Watching segment, I'll come back to that. there is reason for that. All right, so this is the official movie podcast of the Geek Action Network. This week, we're going to be reviewing Source Code, spin some new trailers as to which ones we're not sure at this point. We're kind of making things
kind of rolling the dice on this stuff. Yeah, maybe we should explain that a little
bit. We will in just 1 second. We're going to talk some movie news and we're going to deliver a brand new list of five. This week is a list of five that was actually suggested to us several weeks ago by our good friend in Canada. Name has gone out of my head. Help me.
Mike
in Canada, thank you very much. Which is basically five great sophomore films. And to explain that, basically this is a situation where we have a brand new director on the scene who makes a real impact with their first film, and then what do they follow that up with? And basically, we're looking at, can they match or improve on that amazing blockbuster effort that they started with? All right, so the reason why, of course, we're doing that list is because Source Code is the sophomore film for Duncan Jones, the director of Moon, which made such an impression last year. Year before, I think. Anyway, time flies when you're having fun. All right, now, what Josh was alluding to before, what we should explain is, we had major technical issues this morning. Everything has crashed and died and burned, basically, and we are going out on this live feed completely ghetto. Now, for those who are listening to just the audio podcast, this probably doesn't affect you very much because we'll edit it and make it seem nice and it'll all seem like a normal show. But if you hear us bitching and complaining about certain things not working or you hear some strange noises, that's because we do record this show live every week and there are things that are cropping up live that don't work the way they're supposed to work necessarily. But we will endeavor to push through the best we can. Now, we do start the show usually with a bit of feedback and what we've been watching, and we do have a little bit of feedback. Mm-hmm. First one comes from, that's a geek actually. First
Take
one,
your time there, Dave.
First one comes from, no, that's the wrong one too. Oh shit, what's going on here? These are all the wrong ones. These are the Film Actually ones. That's why, because I've got the wrong pile of paper in front of me. All right, first of all, this one comes from our friend Tristan. And Tristan says, I couldn't help myself but send this in. I happen to be watching Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Rock on, dude. in all its super cheesy gloriousness, and decided to look up Alex Winter and see what he's up to. And to my surprise, they have done a screenplay for the third installment of Bill and Ted Empire, of the Bill and Ted Empire. Oh, glorious days to hear of another cheesy movie. 20 years of waiting. Oh, how I love my cheesy movies. And let's hope this makes it to the screen. Yes, I've actually been following this. The script is completed. Keanu Reeves has come out publicly saying he is committed to it. Alex Winters is committed to it. They are making a third Bill and Ted's film. Whether this is going to be an extraordinary mess, or something kind of fun. That is yet to be seen. But I will point out that George Carlin, who played Rufus in the original, is dead. And George Carlin was kind of like the heart of Bill and Ted's.
Dude, he was the most important part.
I know. So I don't know what they're going to do as a replacement for George Carlin. So anyway, there is a link. He's put a link in, and we'll put it in our show notes for the Huffington Post article that talks about this. So you can actually find out more about that. But yes, Bill and Ted's is on its way. Mm. Chris from Bris Vegas wrote to us. Now, we actually are talking about this story in the film news. So I'll just briefly run through this feedback. And basically he says, caught this piece of news this morning. Arnie is set to return for Terminator 5. I'm going to leave that with you at that point, and we're going to come back to this email when we talk about that piece of news, all right? Because there is more to it than what's in his email as well, okay? Mm-hmm. So remind me, Josh, that's the email. We'll come back to that one, okay?
Okay, cool.
Because we are going to come back to that in Entertainment Buzz. Now, Mike from Canada, our very good friend Mike from Canada, he writes and says, hey, Josh, other guest, and then Dave. Thanks. Am I getting further and further down the totem pole here?
What is with that? I just don't quite get it.
He says, thought your comics list was good. I would love to see Invincible on screen. I agree. I've been reading it, Invincible, like crazy. I'm up to 50-something now, and I'm really enjoying it. Also, an Ex Machina film would be cool. I think it has a great concept. I finally got to be part of your chat room last show. I got to catch you guys signing off. Just can't catch a break with you guys. Well, we're running so late. Theoretically, you could catch us today if you really jumped in now. Anyway, I know you're reviewing Source Code. I loved it, and so did my wife. I think it is a great date movie. Found it predictable in a good way. The ending was great and left a lot to ponder. We will come back to that in our review.
Absolutely,
we have things
course.
To say about that as well. He does also say, I have a feeling you might discuss the Avengers start date, which was 2 weeks ago. I got a thinking, and I would love to see a car chase scene where all the Avengers are in a minivan. Iron Man could be rebooting, so they toss him in the van. They're driving down the street with Black Widow driving, and Hawkeye is shooting at something. Iron Man reboots, says something cool, kicks open the door, and flies away. I think this is hilarious, and I only share it because I feel no one will care but you guys and perhaps Joss Whedon. It sounds like a scene from G.I. Joe, quite frankly.
But at the same time, look, I'll be happy watching Iron Man and Hawkeye and them do anything.
Yeah, so absolutely.
There's very little they can do to fuck this up.
The little piece of news on Avengers that I heard, and I haven't got confirmation on all of this yet, but a lot of rumors are kicking around. Apparently Samuel L. Jackson's script leaked, and they know because they're all watermarked. Apparently Samuel L. Jackson's copy of the script leaked, and because of that leak, some passages apparently have shown up on the internet. And apparently they've shut down production. Now, the reason why they've shut down production is apparently they're rewriting the scenes that leaked. So that the scenes that leaked aren't really the scenes that you think they're going to be anymore. Now, that could mean one of two things. Either A, they're keeping privacy and secrecy to all new levels of weird, or B, there were script problems and they're using this as an excuse to be able to shut down and fix a few script problems. So exactly. We don't know what it's all about, but at the moment, apparently they've halted shooting for a week or something like that while they do some rewrites. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of that, basically. Yeah. And I think that is it. There was actually one other piece of feedback for the Geek Show, which we forgot to read. We will read it next week.
Oh,
all right, we'll come back to that.
We're kind of getting that kind of situation.
It was such a mess that we couldn't get to it all. But we will follow that one up next week. All right, so what we've been watching. And I'm just going to kick this off because I'm going to say I saw two films. It's been 2 weeks since we last spoke. I've seen a film every day, of course, because I'm doing that watch a film a day thing. But I've seen two films of note that I really need to talk about. One is I saw after last week, for those who watched last week, I actually put it in as an addendum on the show notes as well. We talked about 3D Sex and Zen Extreme Ecstasy, and I said we'll probably never see it in this country.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as I said that, our friend Richard over at Real Bits informed me that it's actually playing at Broadway now as we speak. So it is actually here and in the country. So we went to see it. Richard from Real Bits and I went to see it. And wow. All I can say is two things. First of all, words fail me on trying to describe this film. Second thing I want to say
is, he had a lot of trouble explaining.
I have no idea what actually the film was about. It is completely incomprehensible. But second thing is, I don't know how it got past Australian censors. Now, the reason why I say that is not sexually explicit in the traditional sense of like penetration and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But one of the things that our Australian censors are particularly sensitive about has always been violence towards women. And this was the whole thing. Even if they brought back an X-rated category to our rating system, things like bondage videos and stuff would still be banned because violence against women is technically a big no-no in this country. This film, excuse my French, but this film has a guy literally fuck a girl to death. Literally, I'm talking literally, fucks her to death. And another scene, which actually has a woman being tortured, where they sit her on what's called the Iron Lotus, which is a rotating steel, razor-sharp steel flower, which they insert into her, and then they basically pump the little wheel to make it spin, and blood is pouring down her leg. And you sit there and go, how did this get past Australian censors?
Wow.
You know, and it's like, I don't know.
Because it's art, Dave.
Because it's art. And that's exactly what Richard said. He said there is a contingency for this whole artistic merit thing. And all I can say to that is bullshit. Art in whose idea? Whose mind? Whose opinion? You know? And all I can think is I don't have a problem with the contents of this film. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a prude. I'm not saying it shouldn't be there. And all this is all I'm saying is it's double standards and hypocrisy again. All I'm saying is that the way our system works in this country is so hypocritical. We sit there and say, you can't do this, but that film is allowed to. You know? No, I'm sorry. You set yourself some ground rules, stick to the ground rules. I am first one in line to say the entire rating system in this country needs to be overhauled. All right? But as it stands right now, I want to know who passed this film under the current guidelines. And they'll pass this under artistic merit, but they'll ban Mortal Kombat the game. Okay? I'm sorry. We have a real problem in this country. Overhaul the goddamn system.
Yeah.
All right. Third thing I wanted to say, though, is that the 3D in the film is really pretty. All right. It's a really pretty film. It's just incomprehensible. All right. You sit there. There's actually one point in the movie where he has a flashback. They talk about the fact that why are they being so mean to these people? And he says, oh, it's because you betrayed me to this monk. And then they suddenly have this black and white flashback of him talking to the monk, saying how bad it was. And all I can think was, when in the film did that happen? That wasn't in the movie. It's like, I'm not even sure where that flashback comes from. It is incomprehensible. And the other thing, last thing I'll say about 3D Sex and Zen Extreme Ecstasy is that the second half of the movie, and I think Richard over at Real Bits summed it up perfectly when he actually said, this film just gets mean. Yeah. The second half of the film is just mean. The whole thing about it is a really mean-spirited film. So I don't recommend going to see it, quite frankly. I just think it's just wow.
A little bit too much.
Now, the second film I wanted to talk about very quickly was I went to see the remake of Arthur. Thus the opening clip. Okay. And I'm going to write this all up in detail, so I won't go into huge amounts of detail right now because I'm going to write an article. The reason why I went to see it is to write an article of Arthur then and now.
Yeah.
The reason why I played that clip at the beginning is because it really does kind of highlight that whole charm that Dudley Moore has and that kind of the wit that Dudley Moore has. And it's what is sadly lacking from the remake, unfortunately. Russell Brand, who I don't mind, and I quite like him in things like Get Him to the Greek and stuff like that, doesn't play charming very well. And he's working really hard to be that character. And you can see him working really hard.
Because none of us can buy him as that. We know he's the loud alcoholic drunken guy.
Absolutely. Exactly. And so it just doesn't quite work in that. But the biggest issue, I think, is that this is a film out of time. It's a point that my lovely wife, Katie, who, by the way, is having her birthday today. Happy birthday to my lovely wife. There's an issue where you sit there and go, in 1981... seeing the lovable rogue billionaire, you know, having fun.
He
was really short, playing games, laughing a lot. And you sit there and go, boy, I want to have his life, right?
Yeah.
And isn't he fun? In the remake, we sit there and we look at him and we go, you have everything, you prick.
Yeah.
You know, why should I feel sorry for you in any way, shape, or form? Because we have a very different idea of the rich and powerful now. You know, we sit there with all economic crisis and collapses and everything else. We sit there and look at it and go, what have you got to complain about? You know, I just lost my house. You know, so I kind of feel like this is a film that is really, I don't know why it was made, quite frankly. I don't know why it was made. Although I still will crawl across the ground over broken glass for Helen Mirren. So I'm not sure if the dynamic between her and Russell Brand actually works, but she is probably the best thing in the film. All right, so that's what I've been watching. What have you been watching?
Me lately, I got out a couple of horrors. I finally got around to seeing a movie which I managed to find in a DVD bin, which I've been wanting to watch for ages because of the fact that I hold so highly what is the original Friday the 13th film. And this is fuck, I've forgotten his name. Cunningham.
Sean S. Cunningham, yeah.
Sean S. Cunningham. And he had a film called April Fool's Day.
Which I loved.
And look, I have to say that it's a huge step in the right direction for him. Like, you worry about what this guy could have been capable of just because of the fact that he was such an odd kind of a director. And the original film falls together more because of the fact that everything worked as opposed to this. This film feels very ad-libby. Like, a lot of the lines and the dialogue between people seem like a whole bunch of people he liked that got together and had fun being friends together. It works well at what it does. It's a lot more violent than anything he did, like
this. Well, because you're also talking a couple of years further down the track. Yeah, so 80, Friday the 13th, 84? Friday the 13th pushed boundaries, and then a whole bunch of splatter films came after that. So now, after things like My Bloody Valentine, the original, not the remake, the original, and stuff like that, suddenly there was a lot more license to be able to go a lot further.
And look, I mean, the violence wasn't bad, and the prosthetics is really nice. The ending, I get it, and it was what they were trying to do, and it didn't surprise me in any way or form. I was just kind of like, yeah. There we go.
Now they recently made a remake of this film, didn't
Apparently
they?
Apparently 2006. Now, I haven't seen it.
No, neither have I. And I don't know what there is. Anybody in our chat room seen the remake of Friday of April Fool's Day? Because the original, one of the things that really carried the original through as well was that the star of April Fool's Day, Deborah Foreman, was really charming. And for those who don't know who Deborah Foreman is, she played the Valley Girl in the original Nicolas Cage movie, Valley Girl.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, she was the Valley Girl of the title. Yep. And she was always really charming. And it's very sad to note that she kind of just disappeared after her big push of fame in the early 80s. She then just kind of vanished.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was actually working in a mall in 95, the Beverly Center Mall in America, and somebody had reported that they had seen her working behind a counter in one of the other stores.
No
so,
way.
Yeah, apparently. I actually did go looking, but I couldn't find her, so I don't know if it was true or not. But so... So she may be just counter staff now, but I quite liked their performance. I quite liked April Fool's Day, and I actually, unlike you, I actually quite like the ending because, well, in particular, in the day. I don't know if I haven't watched it.
I don't think you know what it is. It's probably just the jadedness.
I haven't watched it in 20 years, so it could be very different now, my opinions of it. But I remember seeing it in the 80s when it first came out and thinking that was because I'm.
It's
old.
Just a little too good. I think is my problem with it. I'm just sitting there going. I don't know.
See, my argument to that, and I tried to bring this up with you the other day, my argument to that is David Fincher's The Game, which I felt the same way about. That was actually my issue with that film, was the fact that and I don't want to spoil the ending, but I didn't buy the end of that film.
But, like, the difference for me, I think, is, and look, spoilers for a film that's like a bazillion years old, but look, the fact that it was all, a joke and a hoax and a prank.
This is April Fool's Day we're talking about. Yeah. Quite literally, it's in the title of the film.
No, but, like, my problem with it is that it explains things that don't make sense, whereas The Game tries to explain things that may be on your mind. Like, afterwards, there's a conversation thing where they actually start explaining what they're supposed to have done if he didn't do those things. So it's like they had counterpoints for what if
Except
he didn't...
Except the last gag, which is the one that I didn't buy, because it takes a lot... Look, spoilers for The Game. This is a film that came out 12 years ago anyway. Yeah, spoilers for The Game. That last gag where he falls off the building, or he jumps off the building at the end... I don't buy that because that is a precision jump, and to actually just hope that he lines up just right and will land just right in the airbag at the bottom is too much chance.
It's like 1,000 meters wide, and they would have checked things like wind and stuff like that. I'm sorry. Yes.
That is a precision jump.
But dude, it's a little bit more different from the fact that the cast members in April Fool's actually say that they weren't in on it at the start. Like, some of them are like, I didn't know about it until this point. It's like, I just don't buy that you would all of a sudden be like, oh, well, in that case, let's go ahead and do this.
All those wacky 80s teenagers.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. It's just like, you'd be like, these people may kill someone. Like, dude, they've got knives.
Yeah, and
already-
at the end of the game, they could have killed him with that. All he had to do was be 4 feet off.
No,
on
but
either
I'm
direction,
saying, I'm saying as
died.
An example, if I was in the situation of that film, and I'm going to try and wrap this up quickly, but if I was in that situation and someone came up to me and went, this is all just a really big gag, and the only people that aren't in are the last two, I'd be like, fuck that. Play your little game, but I'm out of here. Because if someone gets really stressed under pressure and finds a knife, they may stab someone for real, real, okay?
For real, real.
Not for fake, fake, okay? For real, someone dies. And it's like, with the game, everything's set up. They've got, like, teams on site, and the bill's, like, $10 bazillion, because, like, everyone on the planet's in on it. It's, like, it's ridiculous, but it's, like, when you have that much money, who the fuck cares? It's, like, they've probably got a guy halfway down the building on a thing to grab him if he goes off trajectory. I can believe that they have thought of everything.
There's some little hand that reaches up and connects a guide wire to him. Yeah, he's going
exactly. And then the fact that the guy's like, if you didn't jump off correctly, I was supposed to throw you off. And it's like, you can tell that they're going, well, what if he doesn't jump off? I mean, it's not perfect, but it's okay believable in the fact that they would at least let that sort of thing. With this, it's just like, you're telling me that,
but I saw the game when it originally came out. When it first came out, I saw the game, and my reaction was, I enjoyed the film. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the game. All the way up until that last thing, and all I could think, this was my exact reaction. I was watching it, I saw that last thing, I just went, get fucked! And I thought, at that moment, you lost me.
Maybe, you know what I think they could have done with that building is make it a bit shorter. That's the whole thing.
You think?
But the whole thing is, it's supposed to be a tension moment. He's falling and you're like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck? And then like...
And then hits. He lands in the airbag wrong and breaks his neck.
Maybe that's an outtake. I'm just saying.
I just didn't buy that at the end.
Yeah, well, fuck you.
And that's why the game is one of those frustrating films for me, because it was good up until the last few minutes.
This is going to be great later on. Let's save this conversation. Because
actually I have a point to make exactly about that.
Yes, in the review. And we will have time to talk about that. That's all I'm going to say.
Somebody said it looks like Dave's had too much coffee. I'm just, you know. Okay, anyway.
Let's go.
All right. This week's feature film review is Source Code, directed by Duncan Jones and written by Ben Ripley. It stars Jake... Now, have we come to a conclusion? Is it Gillen or Gyllenhaal?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Okay, Gyllenhaal. Michelle Monaghan, Vera Farmiga, who we really liked in Up in the Air, the George Clooney film.
Yeah.
I really like her as an actress. She's got a good feeling about her. Vera Farmiga and Jeffrey Wright. This is a synopsis taken directly from Summit Entertainment. So it says, when decorated soldier Captain Coulter Stevens wakes up in the body of an unknown man, he discovers he's part of a mission to find the bomber of a Chicago commuter train. In an assignment unlike any he's ever known, he learns he's part of a government experiment called Source Code, a program that enables him to cross over into another man's identity in the last 8 minutes of his life. With a second, much larger target threatening to kill millions in downtown Chicago, Coulter relives the incident over and over again, gathering clues each time until he can solve the mystery of who is behind the bombs and prevent the next attack. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty good. And, you know,
that's pretty on point.
That's pretty on point, and better than some of the other synopses we've read from companies.
Yeah.
So here's the trailer for Source Code. This is actually a really short trailer. I think it's only like a minute long. I just snorted into the microphone. I'll edit that out later. No, I won't. All right, Source Code trailer. Here you go. Once again, we are kind of ghetto here, so if things go wrong, just bear with us. All right, so here's the Source Code trailer.
At 7:48 this morning, a bomb exploded on a train outside of Chicago, killing everyone on board.
What is my mission?
A secret program called the Source Code will send you back in time to relive the last 8 minutes of a passenger's life on that train. Find the bomb, and you'll find the bomber.
What would you do if you knew you had less than 8 minutes to live?
I'd make those seconds count.
Welcome back, Evan.
I was unable to find the bomber.
We've been informed there'll be another attack in 6 hours. If you find the bomber, the next attack can be prevented. As always, you will have 8 minutes.
It's the same train, but it's different.
You're kind of freaking me out.
I want to go back in. I'm going to save her.
You can't. It doesn't work that way.
Christina is dead.
Try and stop me.
Sean!
Get back!
Source Code.
Okay, sorry, I missed my cue to come back after that. Anyway, all right, so that's the trailer for Source Code. Now, we had really high hopes for this film because Duncan Jones made such an impression with his first film, with the film Moon, starring Sam Rockwell. And if you haven't seen Moon, stop right now, stop everything, go watch it. Oh, hello, there's the studio phone going off. If nothing else could go wrong today. Anyway, that'll just ring in the background. Oh, there it goes. All right, so... where was I? The studio phone threw me. Oh, yeah, Duncan Jones. Jones and Moon. That's right. Go watch Moon immediately. And if you can, see it on Blu-ray because it looks fabulous. All right. Now, this was a very low-budget film. He made an amazing film for a low budget, and he's now been picked up in the U.S. They gave him basically a lot of money and said, what do you want to make? And he, in this situation, he didn't write it. He wrote Moon as well. In this case, he didn't write it. He's obviously been attracted to this material for some reason, and he brings us Source Code as his sophomore film. Yeah. Josh, what did you think of his sophomore film?
Look, I think you and I both went in with the idea that if they didn't explain out the in-between stuff, that was where they were really going to lose us. It's like if we didn't put more more work into how it all fits.
Wait a minute, I have to stop you right there. Mike from Canada has made it to our chat room. Mike... Dude, welcome to the chat room. All right, continue on, Josh. Sorry.
No worries. Yeah, if they didn't get down the little isolated requirements between everything else, then the movie would have fallen apart because a film like this is so based around your world. You have to set up this really important world. It's like when you first see, you know, sort of when you first sat down and watched The Matrix or whatever, you have this world you have to build up and you have to understand. It's like Inception, whether or not you liked it, fine. But Inception had to build its world before it could explain out from
Absolutely.
That point.
Yes.
And this film does that really well. And it's such an important thing to kind of walk you through it step by step. And it really works well because as he comes back, you get a bit more information, then you go back in. So it's like you don't get bored from either returning too often back into the world, and you don't get bored too often from...
Structurally, I think the film is very sound. I think
exactly.
They build it really well.
The characters are all really interesting. He does a fantastic job at being...
What was that?
Did you just get a thing? What happened there? I swear my computer just talked to us.
It did. It just went boom. Hey. Yeah.
That was so creepy.
That was weird, man. It's talking to you.
Blah.
No, I don't know what it is.
I swear to God it just did it again. Anyway, we'll try and keep going.
Just ignore it. It's trying to put its two bits in for the review.
That was fantastic. Anyway, so moving right along. The film was really good. The acting was really great. I thought that the story structure was brilliant. I like the fact, though a little bit annoyed. I'm starting to get annoyed with these people that are kind of like redoing Hitchcock in every one of their intros.
I leaned to you in the opening credits and went, this is very Hitchcock, because the opening music is very Hitchcock, and it's very North by Northwest in its opening. Yeah.
But yeah, no, look, and it was, it's well done. The chemistry between him and the girl, I forget her name.
Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah. Worked really well. The chemistry between someone I usually don't like, which is Vega or whatever the fuck her name is.
Farmiga, Vera Farmiga, yeah.
Yeah, worked really well. I couldn't help but feel really typecasted on the overwatching doctor that you had.
Well, Jeffrey Wright, I don't know what he was doing because he doesn't normally talk like that. He doesn't normally act like that. Jeffrey Wright got massive acclaim for Angels in America. Amazing performance in that film. And I always thought this is the guy to watch. And he was playing some sort of cartoon character.
It really felt like it. He felt like an absolute mockery of everything that was science. It's like someone went, play a scientist, so you just rocked up on the day and went, all right.
The only thing he was missing was the white coat, you know?
Yeah.
You
know, absolutely. And he was the only character that kind of actually stood out a little bit.
And he had that
for me.
Strange speech pattern that he liked to talk in. It's like, what are you
doing? And he did this thing where he would shake when he talked. And I'm just like, dude, what are you doing? Just relax.
I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was just.
It was noticeable.
It was noticeable, and it didn't quite fit into the reality
but
of the piece.
But he didn't fit into the reality, and especially towards the end of the film, which we'll get into soon. I felt that he was just. He reacted in these ways that it was just like a comic book character.
Yeah.
Apart from that, though, everybody seemed to stay on par. With films like this, a lot of the time you can also get lost if actors don't get what you're trying to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to really sell a world like this. And the idea that he is in this chamber and as we sort of start to gather the knowledge on that and what happens to the chamber and then you start understanding the reasons. It's like all of this was laid out perfectly.
Yeah, and very clear, very easy to understand.
Exactly. And look, it had me right up until the end, and then we hit that 10-minute mark, and I'm going to let you say your bit before we come back to that last... wrap-up bit, which we'll get back to. So, Dave,
We're going to have to do a spoiler section on this, but we don't have any of our usual tools to play with because of this ghetto board that we're working with. But We're going to try and figure this out. All right, but first of all, let me just give you my overall on this. My overall on this is I thought it was actually quite a satisfying film. I quite liked it. Mike from Canada in our chat room has just said he liked Jeffrey Wright, and that's fine. You know, it's going to appeal to some. I didn't hate him. I just felt that he was a bit of a cartoon character. Mm-hmm. I just felt that everybody else is doing so well with trying to push across. It's quite an emotional experience what he's going through. Vera's heartfelt dealing with him on the monitors. Michelle's got a nice connection with him. All of this is going on, and then you've got it's almost like Dudley Do-Right in the background. You know, it's like he didn't quite gel for me.
Yeah, he didn't fit with
didn't
the
quite
casting.
Fit into the reality of what I was seeing here. I liked the structure of the film. I thought. Look, I've got to say right now that I think Jake Gyllenhaal is doing amazing work of late. I think in his last three or four films that we've reviewed, I haven't hated him at all. No. He's never been a problem at all.
He has definitely become one of our standout actors.
He has, and I think he's got a really nice energy about him, and I think he does a really good job in this. He plays from the beginning of all that confusion to his much more determined second half of the film. I think he does really well. And I think his conversations, some of the most touching moments in this film are his conversations with Vera Farmiga over that monitor talking about, you know, his life and, you know, what have you. I enjoyed it. And in our spoiler section, we're going to talk a little bit about the ending, which I think is a little bit weak. And I don't think it's weak in the sense of what it's trying to say. I think it's weak because it feels like they didn't want to go the whole distance. And there's actually a point in this movie where you go, I said to Josh, I waited for it to fade out. I said, this is the end of the movie, and I would have been completely satisfied by that ending.
Absolutely.
And then it went on for a little bit longer. And that going on for a little bit longer wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Mm. It actually gives you something to think about. And But I just sit there and go, if you're going to go in that direction, you could have gone so much further with that. Mm. There's so much more explanation. And in fact, there was an interview with Duncan Jones where he talks about what he wanted to do with that. And you sit there and go, yeah, I can see you wanted to go there, and they obviously weren't letting you. Mm. You know what I mean? And he, as you said, the ending feels like a compromise.
Well, it's interesting because I got a phone call from somebody recently that I asked them to call me when they had finished it, and they watched it last night. And the message literally said, what the fuck was that extra 10 minutes? Mm. And it seems to be the underlying thing. It's like, I want to almost cut this film myself and actually put that ending on it and just leave it at that, because then to me it would be a perfect film. Like, not perfect, but just it would be the wrap-up of the film that I wanted.
And what you could have done, I almost even would have said, you could have ended the film where we think the film should end, start credits rolling, and about halfway through the credits, come back for a post scene with what they left. Because that way, if you missed it, it didn't matter. And if you did see it, well, it's like a little bonus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the fact that it's there tagged right onto the end kind of just
irritates
a little bit. Yeah. It's not as irritating as, say, the ending to War of the Worlds, which you sit there and go, I was completely satisfied with War of the Worlds until the last few minutes, which completely undid everything. Yeah. The ending of Source Code doesn't undo the rest of the film.
No.
It's just it didn't quite take me
it
where I wanted to go.
Correctly. No.
Overall, though, I say I really did like this film, and I really did enjoy it, and had a good time watching it. Love the cast, with the exception of Jeffrey Wright. I mean, and once again, I didn't hate him, just didn't quite work. I really like the ideas in the film. I really like some of the character work in this film. I was a fan, going back a long time ago, of Quantum Leap, and this has got a really Quantum Leap-ish kind of feel to it. I quite liked it. I would recommend people go see it. And I think Mike from Canada in our chat room actually said in his email, it's a great date film. I completely agree. Mm. This would make a great date film.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because the other film I was going to suggest, I was going to say that I had seen earlier in the week, was a film called Heartless, which was an English horror film that has this amazingly interesting premise and then falls apart with what it ends on. And, like, falls apart, like, unwatchable falls apart.
Yeah,
like,
I've
it
seen
was just,
many films that do that.
Yeah,
it's
and
very frustrating.
Unfortunately, I kind of feel this way about it. It's like, I don't feel it to the same level. Like, I enjoyed what I did, but there was such a pit in my stomach when I walked out. Like, I couldn't enjoy it because it had just unnecessarily finished. Like, I had stopped 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I had no interest in what you were showing me. It's like if I had to sit through ads at the end of a film, it's like I don't care about this stuff. I just want to leave.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but it did affect the film to me. It's like it did actually destroy my interpretation of the film. So therefore, I say enjoy it, but just almost shut off for that last 10 minutes and you'll get a much better feeling.
Yeah, it's actually not even 10 minutes. It's only like 3 minutes or 4 minutes. It's actually not that long. Mike from Canada is saying in the chat room right now, he so disagrees with everything that we're saying right now. But, you know, and that's fine. And there's going to be people where that ending does work for. I like what's in that ending. I like the thought-provoking ideas that that ending is giving people. I just don't think it's clear enough, and I don't think it is detailed enough. If you're going to go in that direction, then you really need to wholeheartedly go in that direction. You know, it almost feels like they kind of just went, this is an interesting concept, let's just tag this on.
Yeah, but you know what it is? It's there's not enough time to explain it properly. And I'm not trying to say I'm the stupid film watcher that doesn't get it. What I'm saying is, I get it. I just disagree with you because of the fact that I don't think it's clear enough what you're trying to say.
There is actually a hint to it. There is actually a hint to it earlier in the film. If you pay attention to the film when you watch the film, there's a point where he comes back in the second time. And he goes, it's the same, but it's different.
Yeah.
And that's the hint to the ending, because basically every time he goes in, it is slightly different. So he's coming in at the same entry point, but because he's coming in, he's affecting what's going on around him. And so we do, it's not like it's an afterthought that they added it. There is obviously a thought pattern behind that. It's just like, I know, for example, like, first of all, let's say we do recommend the film. It is a good film.
Yeah.
We're just nitpicking here on the ending because, you know, endings are important. We do have to go into a spoiler section, though, because we need to talk about a couple things specifically. Yeah. All right. Set your watches, guys. I'm looking at my clock. I don't have a clock for the screen because we're not on the right board, but I do. I'm going to look at the screen, and I'm going to say, at the moment, it is 25 past, so we have 5 minutes, all right? 5 minutes of spoilers. So if you're on this listening to the audio podcast, as soon as I say go, just fast forward 5 minutes, all right? And we will stop bang on 5 minutes, all right? So from this point onwards, spoilers for Source Code, okay?
Yeah.
Spoilers are starting now. Okay, now, the ending of this film, the problem I had with the ending of this film, I think the biggest part they didn't explain well enough was not the idea of multiple timelines, all right? That was explained quite clearly. Yep. The problem was with the text message.
Yeah.
Because he sends the text message, but they don't give you a defined... And if you're paying attention, it makes sense. Don't think I'm going... I'm not stupid. I understood how it worked, and if I understood, other people did as well. But it's not clear enough as to what day or where they're at, because he sends the text message, and then she gets it later, right? So, obviously... Because he's gone back in time, he's back before this entire operation started, so when he sends the text message, she's getting it. But it doesn't establish clear enough in the film whether or not timeline she's on.
Did that happen initially? Did that happen at a later period? And if it happened at a later period,
why? Assumption is this is the new timeline that she is now on, and this isn't the same.
If you're going into that sort of territory, you kind of have to establish a time-by-time frame.
Yeah. So for those who haven't seen it and are still sticking with us on this, basically the end of the film finishes with them terminating his life, okay, because he is dead, right? Yeah. And this is all just in his mind. Terminating his life, and in the source code, everything freeze frames. And for me,
beautiful scene.
That is the perfect ending for this film. At this point, it's like it's frozen, as you said. You use that pixelation effect like it's all breaking down, and it breaks apart, and that's it. End of the film.
Yeah.
Now, one of the areas that they kind of play with is the idea that every time he's gone in, it started a new timeline. So basically, it's a new possibility that could happen, which the scientist, Dr. Dude, didn't expect, right? Because he thought it was all just a simulation, so to speak. Now, in this new timeline, we cut back to after the freeze frame, we continue on. And the extra bits we're talking about is he's still going because it's now a new timeline. He's thwarted the bomber, and he grabs a phone and sends a text message to Vera Farmiga. Theoretically, she hasn't come into the office yet because this happened at 7-something in the morning originally. She gets the text message, which says, there's unexpected results on this. You should tell the doctor, basically. And, you know, that's where it goes from there. Okay. And throughout the film, he's been having flashbacks of a sculpture in the park and stuff like that, which he now walks up to and sees the sculpture in the park. And he's like, wow, this is kind of interesting. This is all happening. So it does make sense.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit muddy.
It screams of rewrites to me.
Yeah, exactly.
It screams of the fact that, like, Duncan Jones had a concept he wanted to sell, And I think he would have wanted to go a bit deeper into those pictures and the explanation, as opposed to a little bit less of the sort of flick, 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 flick kind of imagery, and sort of start to expand that out.
HC Widget in our chat room says, so down the different leg of a time trousers, but octopus trousers. Yes, basically.
It's the problem with it is that, like, if they had have done something like, I don't know, 24-esque kind of a thing with him sending the text message and then her walking into the office and that starting as it comes to a head. So sort of she walks into the office and sort of says this, and sort of says this as the third part is now also shutting him off, and sort of then as she walks out of the office,
that's
he
right.
turns
he's
off
cutting
the
it with the two different
exactly.
timelines.
And
yeah.
have the timeline sort of expand out into the sort of like tree of things happening, it would have been a much more clearer, defined, and much more rewarding experience, because you finish on that final scene.
Yeah.
You finish on him finishing that life. Mm. As opposed to finishing that afterwards, because technically everything that happens in that afterwards happens before that.
Yeah.
That's the problem with it. It's like, you're finished.
The word I think we're using here is, the word we're looking for here is convoluted.
Yes. Or just, you're out of context the whole time.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all of this stuff happens before the film ends.
Mm.
And that's where the problem is, because it's not like the world's restarting.
It's like we have to back up all the way back to the beginning of the film, when he wakes up on that train, actually happened before any of the stuff with Vera Farmiga
exactly.
actually happened. So we have to back all the way back
up. It's out
of
sync, which means that none of it fits nicely. It all feels like it's kind of like, and here's the explanation for everything else. It's like they could have given that to us in a sheet as we walked out.
It's almost like an instruction sheet.
If you wanted to know what was going on, there's the sheet, and that will explain everything. It's like, it just doesn't work because the film is over, and then all of this other stuff happens. Yeah. It's like,
and we needed more of those little hints throughout it.
Yeah.
Like that it's the same, but it's different and stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, I agree with you. I think it just needed a little bit more explanation, time and energy put into that. It's a great idea that isn't pulled off very well.
Yeah.
And I think if they had committed to it, they could have pulled that off. Duncan Jones is smart enough to have pulled that off. And the fact that he made it as coherent as he did with what he had is a credit to him.
Yeah.
I also don't think it's quite right. Yeah. Now, it is 5 minutes, so spoilers over. Okay, that was cathartic. We haven't done a spoiler section in a long time. All right. So that's the review for Source Code. We do think it's a good film. We do suggest you go see it. Just be aware that the ending isn't quite what it could have been.
Yeah.
But it's not bad. It doesn't destroy the film. It's not one of those situations where you watch the whole film and then you go, what the hell was that ending? We've seen so many cases, and as I was saying before, with a situation like War of the Worlds, the Spielberg version, where I actually didn't mind the film. And then in the last couple of minutes of that film, to completely destroy any sort of reality that that film could have had in one fell swoop, you just sit there and go, boy, that was a complete dud. Because of that. And I think that's why it lost a lot of people. Because the film, if you actually go back and watch it and stop before that last few minutes happens, it's actually not a bad film. It's that ending kills it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not the Martians dying. That's in the book. I'm talking about the real ending of the movie. All right? All right. So, Josh, any final words?
No.
Look, go see it. It's well worth having a look at. And Duncan Jones, I don't think it's as good as Moon. I don't think his sophomore effort is as good as his original, but I still have a lot of hope for him. I think he's I think he's a talented filmmaker that I think still has a lot in him.
Yeah.
And I will be looking forward to his next film, quite frankly. Yeah. All right, let's move on to some entertainment buzz. We got a couple of new trailers to show, and we have a little bit of news, which we're going to come back to that email about as well. First of all, let's just do this really quickly, because Josh has been waiting for it. I know he's been waiting for it. The new Green Lantern trailer came out this week. Now, it actually came out a few days ago. I put the post up. I've embedded it on Geek Action. You can go watch it there in better quality. Apple has it in high def in the iTunes store. You can watch it there. We didn't like the first Green Lantern trailer that came out. Thought it was a bit lackluster.
Lackluster. We didn't not like it.
It was just kind of like a, Then that 4 minutes of footage came out from CinemaCon, which we actually went, that's not too bad. And now the new trailer has come out, and the new trailer is a damn sight better than what it was. So here's the new Green Lantern trailer. Enjoy. We'll be back in a minute.
Great light has gone out in the universe. Worlds annihilated. Lanterns, we face an unprecedented danger. An enemy powerful enough to destroy entire civilizations. To fight this enemy, the Ring chose a human. But I don't need to tell you your duty.
To a lantern that I got from a dying purple alien.
So, this is the chosen human.
The Ring turns thought into reality. Its limits are only what you can imagine.
The sword? How human.
Remember, your enemy is not gonna play fair.
Is that what I think it is?
An alien life form, Doctor. The first that mankind has ever encountered.
Son, we're gonna get you well again.
I've never felt better in my life.
They said they wouldn't have chosen me. They didn't see something I don't see yet.
I see it. You have the ability to overcome fear.
Stay here.
No problem.
If you die, innocent lives will be lost. Your world will be annihilated.
Help me save my planet.
Fight it. Fight it with me.
Brightest day. Blackest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Green Lantern's light!
Well, I gotta say, that's a little bit better than the first trailer.
Absolutely.
It just has a little bit more gusto behind it.
That, you know, 1,000 Green Lanterns firing a beam of light into the sky always kind of, you know,
yeah,
tickles
manifesting
bone.
An M60. A minigun.
A minigun,
yes.
No, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I really enjoy that. And I'm looking forward to that. It comes out in June. And now I have to say that, yeah, I am actually looking forward to that one now. I wasn't quite there before, but now I'm ready to say, yes, I think we might have a winner on our hands. So, DC, you might have actually pulled it off.
Yep.
All right. NewYorkMagazine.com had an interview with Tom Hiddleston, who we had the pleasure of interviewing 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
He played Loki in Thor, and he finally has confirmed, because if you remember going back 2 weeks ago, we said that it still hadn't been confirmed as to whether he'd been signed for the Avengers or not.
Yeah.
Apparently he has, and he has sat down with Joss Whedon, and this is what he had to say about it. This is an interview, as I say, in the New York Times, was it Vulture, the Vulture magazine part of the newspaper.
Yeah.
He actually said, the question was, at what point did they tell you that you would get to be the primary villain in the Avengers? And Tom Hiddleston said, well, I think it was planned from the get-go, but it wasn't really dead set until near the end of Thor. What was wonderful is that about 4 days after I wrapped on Thor, I went out for a cup of tea with Joss Whedon. So English. I went out for a cup of tea with Joss Whedon. We sat down at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were still sitting there at 6 o'clock. He said, as in Joss Whedon said, listen, you've lived with this guy for 6 months. I want you to spill the beans and tell me all of his dark secrets. Who is this guy? Why is he who he is? Ken had already shown him a rough cut of the film, and mercifully everything I had done accorded with Joss Whedon's idea of the character too. He went on to say, I'm really so flattered that Marvel and Joss think I can take them all on. In Avengers, it's going to be me versus 7 of them, and I say good luck to them, frankly.
That's so cool.
So Loki is now confirmed as the primary villain for the Avengers. Now, with the Cosmic Cube and everything, we should be seeing a nice Skrull war being manipulated by Loki. So this should be quite interesting.
Yeah.
More details as they come to light. So there's that. Now, we missed a week, so we got kind of missed some of the excitement of last week, which of course was that Osama bin Laden was shot by American troops. Now, I don't bring this up to get political. I bring this up because Hollywood is salivating to try and make an Osama bin Laden movie now, obviously.
What?
They've been putting their feelers out. But here's the ironic part.
Yeah.
Catherine Bigelow, director of The Hurt Locker,
yeah,
was already working on a film called Kill Bin Laden. Apparently, it was a film about that exact squad of troops that went in and killed bin Laden. Now, her film was actually a fictional film which was talking about a failed attempt on bin Laden, but it was that team, that particular team that she was talking about.
Wow.
So now, they've gone back very, very quickly and started to rewrite, because of course now she has an ending for her film, and it's the writer of The Hurt Locker and her, and they are going to go ahead and make Kill Bin Laden. And it, ironically enough, was about that exact team who went in and did the exercise. So, talk about being perfectly positioned at a time in history. I mean, God, could she have... It's like somebody just handed her a giant bow-wrapped present.
Wow. Well, look, though, it'll be a hard film now because you had this kind of, like, this open-endedness to that because we all just had forgotten about him. Like, I mean, you know, not everyone.
But no, we hadn't forgotten about him, but...
But, yeah. Like, he... The threat was less about him and more about just the random attacks and about the general thing. Like... He was presumed either dead or, you know, like, it's not so much forgotten, but we had just kind of gone, well, he's probably the dead or hiding so far down a cave, we'll never find him. Mm. And then just, boom, out of nowhere it came up. So,
where was he in the end? Not to get all political, we say this, but then we start talking about it. Where was he in the end? Pakistan. The one place that we've been saying, he's probably in Pakistan for the last 10 years. I think everybody's saying, I think he's probably in Pakistan.
Mm. You know? But that's the thing, and it's like now you have to kind of rewrite the way you want the story to go. So I reckon that's going to be the hardest thing because she had this kind of a concept and, you know, how difficult it was. And now it's done and it's like, oh, shit.
Well, now it can be an uplifting film as opposed to a downer. The question is Catherine Bigelow that capable of making an uplifting film?
That's the question.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just thought that was very interesting. And the part that I found most interesting was the fact that it was actually about that battalion. I think it's really, really interesting that she was already...
She's that far on the pulse. Like, she's that good
at... She really is. Well, not so much her, but what's his name? Boll, the guy who wrote it. Mark Boll, I think his name, whatever his name is. I think he's the one that's really... He's on the ground with them, man. I think he seems to know... I mean, after Hurt Locker as well, I guess these people have contacts, you know? Okay, we have another trailer. Now, I was going to play you a trailer. Delta Knight sent through a link for a film called Another Earth, and it's an interesting trailer, but it's kind of low, and it's kind of downbeat, and it's very indie film feeling, but basically about Earth suddenly appears in the sky of Earth, and it's basically an alternate Earth. And so this concept is there is going to be another you on that planet living another life. You know, it's this whole... What could be different in this world? In the actual film, it goes on kind of this indie bent where it's all, you know, about, you know, maybe life is better over there and all this sort of stuff. And it's interesting, and I will embed the trailer, but I've decided that because we've had so many problems this morning, I don't want downbeat because we want to be uplifted. So instead, I think we're going to play the trailer for Harry Potter because... as I wrote on the post, we have this embedded at geekactually.com, and this is actually about a week old, but we didn't do a show last week. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I want to play it is because this trailer was this is a powerful trailer. And all I could think, and this is what I wrote on the post, was finally we can review Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows because we'll have a whole goddamn movie. Okay? Because we only had half a movie last time.
We really didn't want to, did we?
No, we fought it, but, you know, and in the end, you kind of had to take it for what it was. But here's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. And this is bringing everything to conclusion. This is the end of Harry Potter. And have a look at this, because this is a crackerjack goddamn trailer.
On the wanted any of you to die for me. Come on, Tom. Let's finish this the way we started.
Together!
Right.
Seriously, what is with Tom Hiddleston, like Tom's character, whatever his name is, Voldemort. Constantly throughout that entire thing? It's just, yeah, for like 90% of that entire thing.
That looks epic.
Yeah, no,
talk about the complete destruction of Hogwarts.
The best way to end something is just trash everything. Absolutely. Like, it doesn't matter what series you're going. That's the way they're going to end Twilight, too. Just blow up the whole city.
Oh, why? God, I hope so.
Because it's the only way you can end a huge series without everybody being like, well, that was kind of pointless.
H.C. Widget says, ooh, shiny.
Yeah.
So, yes, no, I think that is looking awesome. And I am actually really looking forward to it. I'm a big Harry Potter fan. I think they've done really well with the films. I think even half a film from before, I'm fine with, you know. I want to see the ending of that film. What I want to see is I want to see Harry Potter Part 1 and 2 put together and basically give me 1 3-hour epic.
Yep, I want that on Blu-ray as one part.
Yeah, that's what I want. That's why I haven't bought it yet. It's been out on Blu-ray now for a few weeks. I have not bought it on purpose because I don't trust them, quite frankly. I don't want to buy it and then have them turn around and sell Part 2 and then a couple months later say, oh, here it is all as one, you know? Yeah. I don't trust them. I want to see Part 2 come out on Blu-ray, find out what they're doing, and then I'll buy it.
Yeah.
So, anyway. So there's Harry Potter. We had this piece of news. Now.
Apparently we did.
We have this piece of news. Now, Chris from Bruce Vegas sent me this email, but I'd already had it in the show notes. So I've just added his email to the bottom of our existing story. Apparently, Justin Lin, who is the director of Fast Five, or Fast and the Furious Five, and Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, and whatever the fourth one was called, has basically proposed a new Terminator film, funnily enough, called Terminator 5, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is apparently attached to reprise his role, and this is being shopped around. It's not a Go project. It's being shopped around, and it's made headlines everywhere. Everybody's talking about Arnold returning to Terminator. First of all, can I just say, isn't he too old?
And also a little bit flabby now.
Well, he's a robot. He's not supposed to age. All right? All right, so first point. Now, we stopped his email. We'll come back to his email now.
Chris, but maybe he's attached as like some as the general dude.
No, no, he's playing the T-101.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All right, so, hi, guys. Caught this piece of news this morning. Arnie is set to return in the film Terminator 5. How much worse can this news be for Terminator fans? This is Chris from Bruce Vegas' email that we stopped writing. Not only is he now too old for the role, the movie is rumored to be returning to the Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines storyline and set to ignore Terminator Salvation, and is going to be directed by the twit who is directing Fast and Furious 5. How many times does the plot from T2 have to be rehashed? James Cameron must be appalled.
Yeah.
He also goes on to say, if Arnie wants anyone to take him seriously, why doesn't he just sign on for True Lies 2? He could pull that off for sure.
Absolutely.
Provided they play the aging action hero card, bring back Tom Arnold, arguably the best thing about the original True Lies, and keep the humor that was so effective in the original film. Agreed. There's no argument from us whatsoever. Although, if True Lies isn't being directed by Cameron, which it wouldn't be, I don't see a point in doing it. Why doesn't he just do something new? That's a better idea, you know?
Because he's an action star, and action stars don't do new things.
Now, it says here, Terminator 5 isn't going to get my money, period. And the T-1000 is still the best villain in history, according to Chris from Bruce Vegas. Thank you for that email.
That's a strong call.
Now, here's some stuff for you. The plot thickens. The plot thickens and says that according to Latino Review this week, the entire original surviving cast of the Terminator and Terminator 2 is returning. Linda Hamilton and so forth. And apparently even Michael Biehn, because it's...
Wait, even Edward Furlong?
Well, Who knows? But the point is that this...
Dude, he's a drug addict, man. Well, come on, that's supposed to be funny. Anyone in the chat room? Anyone? No,
crickets, all right, crickets.
Fine, whatever.
Okay. All right, so basically it comes on with this whole thing, and at the very bottom of his article he says... where is it? He...
See, Mike's with me.
it says why he writes this whole long article about all the Terminator stuff. This is in the Latino Review, and says, why am I talking about all this? Because rumor has it, or the latest rumor is, that the entire cast is returning, which would mean Michael Biehn and everybody, because it's time travel, they can do this.
Yeah.
And all I can say is, have you seen Linda Hamilton lately? She's starring in Chuck at the moment.
Yeah,
she's had some work done, she's getting older, she's carrying a little bit of... I don't see fans being happy with Sarah Connor like that. I think they want Sarah Connor from Terminator 2. Yeah. Michael Biehn has been kicking around for a while, and you know, he was in whatever. But the point is that if you're going to cast somebody to play the Michael Biehn character, the Reese character, I'd get Timothy Oliphant, because Timothy Oliphant looks like Michael Biehn, acts like Michael Biehn, and is the same age as he was when he did the first Terminator. You know, it's like, I wouldn't necessarily get Michael Biehn back.
Mike brings up an interesting point. Have you seen Robert Patrick?
Yes, and the X-Files was the last time I saw him, and he's looking kind of puffy too.
Yeah, so, he's getting old, man.
Now, are you guys ready for the good news?
Oh, here we go.
Here's the good news, and there is a silver lining on this horrible thundercloud of an idea.
Right.
The silver lining is Justin Lin recently came out in a statement and said, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. So this entire thing could be rumor and conjecture.
Oh, I love it.
Because according to Justin Lin, he has no idea what people are talking about, and he's thinking about doing another Fast and Furious movie.
Oh, dude. That's
so the silver lining is that this may not happen at all.
Yeah.
All right? And this may just be some wet dream of some blogger starting something, who knows where it started, and it got picked up.
Mm.
And people went, wow, what a concept, man, you know? And that's a great idea. I actually don't think Schwarzenegger is even thinking about returning to the Terminator at this point.
I think the people underestimate him. He may be the governor or whatever you want to call him, and you know, he may be a big puffy dude that doesn't speak perfect English, but the guy's not stupid, or at least not 100% stupid, because you can't run.
And also, let's point out one thing. I've been reading the movie sites lately. Can I point out that every third article is the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger is attached to another project at the moment? Ever since he announced he's going to be back on film, he's in everything.
Do you think he's just playing it up? He's just like, people are like, are you going to be in this? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, he's never heard of the film. He's just like, yeah, man, I'm in. Yeah, totally. Just
sign
give me a call.
he's just waiting for one to stick.
He's just waiting for the internet to powerfully enough respond to it, and he'll be like, that's me. I'll be on that one.
Absolutely. He's just waiting for one to stick, I think. He's just saying yes to everything, and eventually something will stick. Speaking of something sticking... The new Conan the Barbarian trailer came out this week.
Did you say stick or stink?
Well, take it either way you like. Going back several weeks ago, we showed a teaser trailer for Conan the Barbarian. This is right. The new film starring Jason Momoa as Conan. And I would like to point out that I've been watching the new TV series, the HBO TV series, Game of Thrones.
Mm.
And in that Game of Thrones series, Jason Momoa is playing a barbarian warlord. And all I can think is, boy, real stretch from what you're doing right now, you know? So it seems like paying barbarian warlords is what he wants to play right now. So that's all he seems to be playing.
Seems to be good at it enough, I guess.
All right, so, and we actually saw that teaser trailer, which was, remember the one that had the puffs of smoke?
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that tells us nothing whatsoever. Yeah. Well, at least this is now a trailer.
Right.
And all I can say is, I'm going to let you make up your own minds about this, but all I'm going to say is, my two bits, I'm getting a real Scorpion King vibe on this, okay? So here's Conan the Barbarian for you guys, for your viewing pleasure.
I see a journey. A man crossing the sands.
A knight.
A warrior. Your paths will merge.
Behold! In despair! Your new master!
Kalar raises the souls of the unspeakably evil.
You're sought to enslave all of Hyboria.
No man should live in chains. Run from me, and I will tear apart the mountains to find you. I will follow you to hell.
I'm hoping everyone that knows me or knows anything about metal music will know that if that trailer had been done with what was in Scorpion King, which was the I Stand Alone thing by Godsmack, you probably would have got a lot better trailer, because that music's horrible and does reek.
It reeks. Delta in our chat room has said, is it worth watching the Oni Conan the Barbarian? Fuck yeah.
That thing is fucking hilarious.
Avoid the sequel. Conan the Destroyer is terrible. But Conan the Barbarian, and avoid Red Sonja at all costs. But the original John Milius directed Conan the Barbarian is an awesome film for what it is, for what it sets out to do, which is create a big sword and sandals and barbarian fighting warrior movie. Yeah. It's great. And one of the things that actually made it really good was the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger only opens his mouth about three times in the entire film. He's just this big stoic monster of a man at the peak of his bodybuilding days. The fighting is really good. It's really well shot. Look, I can't speak highly enough of Conan. I think Roger Ebert was the one that summed it up best, where he gave it 5 stars in its original review, and everybody said, how could you give that 5 stars? And he said, because for what it set out to do, it is perfect. Mm. And it is a perfect barbarian film, big fantasy epic. And one of the greatest soundtracks, if you like motion picture scores, it is actually one of the greatest scores ever written. Basil Poledouris wrote it, and it is just, I listen to this day, I still listen to it regularly. It is an amazing score. Big orchestral piece. Really, really good stuff. So if you haven't seen Conan the Barbarian, go out and see that and possibly avoid that one. Because, I don't know, is it me? There's a problem I have with Jason Momoa. It's not this film. It's obviously the way he looks. I never watched Stargate Atlantis.
You don't know why? Because he just looks like a fucking Twilight Lord.
Well, I was about to say, no, not only that. He looks like his face is made of prosthetics. He's got weird eyebrows and a weird forehead. He's this very odd-looking man.
Look, he doesn't look like a barbarian. He looks like a made-up dude made up to look like a barbarian.
A Chippendale with a sword.
Like, he looks like he isn't as, full-on and violent as he looks.
Ah, Mike from Canada. He looks like a caveman. There you go. Yeah, no, he's got that Cro-Magnon look to him. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going out on a limb and saying I'm going to watch that, because I'm not sure about that one at all.
Yeah, no, me neither.
I'm not sure about that one at all. And look, the visual effects, production design, and so forth look like Clash of the Titans, and the tone looks like Scorpion King. How wrong could we go with this movie?
Yeah, no, it's not standing up with me, man.
Not at all. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to do our lists of five. Lists of five this week are five sophomore films, or five great sophomore films, I guess we could say. I'm taking... Actually, this is five really good sophomore films. Okay, there you go. As we said at the head of the show, a sophomore film is basically the second film from a director. They make a big splash with their first film, whether it's a critical darling, whether it's a financial darling, whatever it might be. But they have a great impact with their first film. And can their second film equal or better their initial film? And that's the big question. And this is a list of five directors who have actually done that, where we've actually bettered or equaled our original launch.
Really?
Well, that's the way I've interpreted it.
Well, thanks for making that. I thought sophomore films, like the one after the original, that was what I was going on. My list is based on the people that had really good second films.
That's what I'm saying.
but not necessarily good first films.
Oh, well, that's going to be an interesting take.
Well, there you go.
That's going to be
interesting. Sorry, that was my misconception.
No, the reason why I was brought up is because Mike was talking about Duncan Jones and Moon and how good Moon was and what would his follow-up to that be.
Right.
That's the way I interpreted it anyway. I could be wrong. But we'll take it as that. That sounds good.
Cool. No, go.
We can interpret these lists any way we like, remember?
Yeah.
So I'm interpreting it as a director who made a splash with their first film. And
In regulation to that, none of these had necessarily really bad first films. It's just that they weren't exactly...
No. Cool. All right. Well, I'll start us off then with my list. And I'll say my number five is Rob Reiner, who made a really big splash with This is Spinal Tap. And he followed that up with a film that not a lot of people saw, which is very interesting that I put it on this list. But it still stands as one of my favorite teen romance films ever made, which is a film called The Sure Thing with John Cusack. Which I really enjoyed. And a lot of critics really loved it. It didn't get much of a box office scene.
Yeah.
But I think it is a really good...
What was it about?
It's basically a road movie about Gibb, played by John Cusack, who needs to get across America because his friend has told him that if he can get across America during the spring break holiday... He's got a girl who is a sure thing. Put out for him.
Yeah.
And so he basically decides that this is worth going for. So he's traveling across country. He gets hooked up with this stuck-up, obnoxious girl who goes to school with him, Daphne Zuniga, who, of course, over the course of their journey, because everything goes wrong on this journey, they end up falling in love with each other. And, of course, the sure thing isn't that important anymore because it's about this journey of these two people going across country. And it's really sweet. It's really charming. And John Cusack is great.
Mm.
It's also the film that taught me how to shotgun a can of beer. So well worth having a look at if you haven't seen The Sure Thing. Your number five.
My number five is Quentin Tarantino, who originally opened up with Reservoir Dogs. There was a film before that, but it's a short. It's not a full-length film.
Yep.
So his first film was... Reservoir Dogs, and then went on to do Pulp Fiction.
Absolutely.
And I don't think there's very many people I know that wouldn't say Pulp Fiction is an amazing film.
Absolutely. So, and I think that's that's an amazing choice. I think Quentin Tarantino is a really good example of this. Yeah, and as you say, he made a short film. I've also taken that into account. With my list, these are all people whose sophomore feature film. They may have directed television, they may have directed shorts, but it's when they hit feature film areas. Mm-hmm. Okay. My second one, so number four for me is the Wachowski brothers.
Yeah.
They turned in a relatively low budget thriller called Bound.
It's actually on my list as well,
which I really like. And then, of course, their second film was The Matrix.
And like, I mean, the thing I wanted to bring up with them is it's kind of
where
like
is it? Where on your list do we fall?
It's next. The thing I wanted to bring up about that film was it's almost like it was all they had. Like, they threw it all in there, and then after that, they just ran out.
Yeah, they kind of have, haven't they?
Yeah, but anyway, we'll come back to them. I'll talk about them.
We'll talk about them when they come up on your list. So your number four.
My number four is someone that you're totally going to disagree with, which is David Fincher, who started out, his first film was Seven.
No, his first film was Alien 3.
Other way around. Alien 3 was his first feature film, then his second one was Seven.
Yes.
Now,
I agree with you that is a major step in the right direction.
I think that, you tend to disagree, and I actually really enjoyed Alien 3, and I know that it was a mess and blah, 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 blah. Give me whatever things you want. It had aliens.
I've softened a lot over Alien 3, but for the first 5 or 6 years after its release, I felt about Alien 3 how you felt about... Terminator Salvation.
I know. And we've been through this.
But I've softened on Terminator.
Now, I saw this much younger, and look, I mean, it was one of those films that got me into the concept of learning an entire history to the backstory of films. So looking outside the ball, playing the games, reading the comics, reading the side history and all that. And when Alien 3 did come out and I watched it, it was everything I wanted it to be because I wasn't old enough to be... upset by all the things that upset you. And to me, it was an alien film with a whole bunch of aliens running around, and it had this interesting world and this great design. And then after that, I got Seven, and Seven is just fucking amazing.
Well, for me, Seven is really the start of his film career. And I think I think that's how he feels about it, too. No, I seriously think that David Fincher...
No way. He learned so much from Alien 3.
He hates Alien 3.
Absolutely.
He hated the experience. He hated everything about
Absolutely. That. And he is the director he is today because of
that's
all
that's what I'm
that.
Saying. So I think as far as he's concerned, his career starts at 7, you know?
Yeah. No, but look... But as an effort, it's like, you know, you've got this guy who gets that as sort of like a first major film project. And, you know, like it, hate it, or love it, it's still part of the game. And it's still one of those films. And then to go from there to just 7, where I have no idea how he managed to convince anyone that this film
No, and I remember when 7 was coming out, because 7 is a good, what we're talking about a good 10 years later?
It was 90...
It was 95. So when did Alien come out?
It's 3 years.
3 years. All right, 3 years later. I remember when 7 was coming out, I was saying, my God, they gave him another film? Yeah. And I almost didn't go see 7 because I went, David Fincher, oh, Alien 3, because that was right in my period of hatred. But I was so glad I did. And from that point onwards, I thought, well, Fincher, you really redeemed yourself. And it really does show, it's a really good exercise in showing when a director has more creative control over his product and it isn't being manipulated by the studio system.
Exactly. But a great second
film. Great sophomore film. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. All right, my number 3 is Rian Johnson, who made a real splash with Brick,
and then
made a really solid second film with The Brothers Bloom. Not, I think, better than Brick, but I think it's a really good film in its own right. And I think it's a very different film, but in many ways just as good a film. And we had lots of good things to say about it when it came out. I don't think it's as clever as Brick in its execution, but a really good watch. Yeah. And I'm much more likely to get
as
my
wife... As
a
director, it's a great second film.
It's a great second film. And it was actually a much more successful film because it had much more push behind it, bigger budget behind it, and it had a much wider audience. My wife still hasn't watched Brick and has no interest in it, but she watched Brothers Bloom, you know? So there is a much broader scope to that film. Mm. I think Rian Johnson's got a lot to go, and I can't wait for Looper.
Yeah,
which is his third film. So I'm very interested to see where he goes with that. Your number 3, of course, we know.
Yes, we do. And look, I mean, the Wachowskis, as I was saying, they really kind of got lucky with their second effort. They had this great concept. They had a great build on it. There must have been just energy around them. Because it's like, you know how when you have certain ideas that you tell people and people just go, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like... That's how it feels to me. It's like they sat down and they had some one-off stonerish comment. Sorry, guys, show me that you're wrong. But so far, I haven't seen anything that points me in another direction where you went, hey, what about this world? It's not like a world, but this. And then people just latched onto it and it just built up into this amazing idea for a film. Because, look, Bound was an okay film.
I like Bound, though. I thought Bound was a really solid thriller. But it's not even in the league of The Matrix.
Exactly. And it's like The Matrix is everything that we know and love today of that. And then it's sort of like... It kind of petered off after that. But
I saw Bound in its initial release, so The Matrix hadn't even been thought of yet. And when I saw Bound, I sat there and went, wow, this is actually pretty ballsy. You know, this is a pretty ballsy film. And I thought, wow, who are these guys? And then looked back and found out that they were screenwriters and they had written Assassins and, you know, they had written a few things. And you sit there and go, wow, these guys have got a real future ahead of them. Little did we know what was coming, you know, with The Matrix, what a phenomenon that was. I think the Wachowskis are a really good example. I think so far on these lists, I think the Wachowskis and Quentin Tarantino are the standouts in this. But I think we're going to turn this around a little bit as we get further up the list. My number 2 is Lawrence Kasdan. Now, this is kind of the low-key side of it because he's not big and splashy. But... His first film was a really successful little thriller called Body Heat. And we've talked about this on the show before with William Hurt and a very young first performance from Kathleen Turner. Saucy, steamy, erotic thriller about deception and murder and all sorts of stuff in a really heat wave induced Florida. Mm. It captured the mood amazingly. He then turned around and followed that. His second film was the box office sensation and critical darling, and to this day still holds as one of those films where everybody goes, it's a film you have to see if you're into performance, which was The Big Chill, which was that amazing ensemble cast with Kevin Kline, William Hurt, and so on. If you haven't seen The Big Chill, God damn it, slap yourself on the head and go watch it, because it is a great film. With a great performance, just to sell you, a great performance by Jeff Goldblum, who is just terrific in it.
Yeah.
And great cast all around, about a group of friends who gather for the funeral of another friend from college. And this group of people who were so close in college have all grown apart, and they try and regain that friendship. And of course they can't, because they're all different people now. And it's a great film. And Lawrence Kasdan has just gone on from strength to strength. And once again, coming from a screenwriter's background, this is the guy who wrote The Empire Strikes Back. He wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, and he's gone on to write and direct many films since. So as a sophomore film, though, I think The Big Chill is a really mature and amazingly competently put together film for a second film.
Yeah.
Your number two.
My number two, you can do it one of two ways. If we're going to take your original thing, I've actually realized that
you've pretty much hit that anyway.
I've stayed inside your thing, yeah. But the one thing I didn't do, which you did, was I didn't discount TV movies because they're still films.
I discounted TV movies.
Now, it doesn't matter because technically most people would agree with you, but I'm still going to go with my original thing because my director is Frank Darabont. Now, if you want to go the way I was looking at it, which is that he originally...
You go either way with that one, actually.
Yeah, Buried Alive was a TV film, and from that film, he got The Shawshank Redemption.
Mm.
Now, fail at the box office, it might. It was critically amazing.
Yeah, but funny thing is, I think it's actually very profitable now.
Absolutely. And it was one of those films that made its money back eventually.
Brilliant, brilliant film.
And a great second film. Yeah. But if you want to take that as his first film, his next film was The Green Mile.
Which is also a great film.
You can't really lose with this guy. Yeah. I mean, like, Frank Darabont is one of, in my opinion, my favorite directors of all time. But yeah, no, the man offered the strength of a TV movie, got Shawshank Redemption, which he managed to pull together greatly.
And I'm one of those few people who actually liked The Majestic, which was, I think, was his third film.
That was his third, yeah.
And I really liked The Majestic, and so many people bag and rag on that film, and I actually really liked it. I thought it was a really sweet, sensitive film with a good performance from Jim Carrey. Yeah. I don't know why people layer so much hate on that film.
It happens.
All right, my number one, I think, is The Crowning Glory.
Oh, I don't know, man. I
haven't seen your list, so I don't know. My number one is actually Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
All right. This is a man whose first film failed at the box office, but was critically given basically 5 stars by every single person in existence, and everybody said what an amazing film it was. Goldie Hawn got nominated for an Oscar for her performance. The film was called Sugarland Express. Now, people could argue and say his first film was Duel. No, made for TV. His first theatrical film was Sugarland Express. And it unfortunately was produced by the same people who were producing The Sting. And The Sting, they decided to give all of their box office clout to and all of their marketing dollars, and Sugarland Express died at the box office. But everybody renownedly will say this is a brilliant film. A great film based on true events and fantastic stuff. What does he follow this film with? He follows this film with arguably what is the film that actually created the term blockbuster. He followed it with Jaws. Now, Jaws, in putting it in context of today's market, we sit there and we go, it's just a film about a big shark and it was very successful. No. This was a film that was beyond successful. Up until that point, no movie had ever crossed the $100 million mark in its initial release. Films had done it over time. Jaws was a phenomenon. It created the term blockbuster. It is what made Hollywood studios decide that they had to have $100 million films every single summer. It is what created the market that we see today. This film was more than just a blockbuster. This film was a milestone in cinema. And to do that as your sophomore film, I think, is probably a pretty good effort.
That's pretty amazing.
And then, of course, he followed that with Close Encounters. He's had a couple of failures, but he's had a pretty successful run there, I think, you know, in the 70s to early 80s. All right, your number one. Beat that.
Well, look, I probably can't beat that because, look, traditionally, I don't think there is any way to top a man who basically defines the word.
The cinema, yeah.
But in my opinion, someone that did an amazing effort for what was the second film because... John Carpenter, who goes at the top of my list.
Now, I almost had John Carpenter on my list, but I think there may be a foul on this. But let me hear it.
Film was, outside his short films, was John Carpenter's Dark Star.
Yes, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, the problem I had here, now, I'm going to hear me out on this, okay? Because your follow-up film is going to be Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah.
Which I loved. Right. And John Carpenter was so close to being on my list. All right. The problem I have, and the reason why I called foul on it, not for you, but the reason why I took it off my list, was the fact that Dark Star was originally a short. It was a graduation. No, wait a minute. No, hear me out for this. It was a graduation film from university, right? Mm-hmm. Which he then later expanded to a feature film and released in cinemas. Timeline-wise, I don't know where it actually falls as its theatrical release.
Its release, I was looking it up before. Its release was 1974.
Right.
And Assault on Precinct 13 was 1976.
Okay, well...
So that's 2 years later. Where's your problem?
Because I don't know whether the 1974 release in that, because of the way IMDb is set up, I don't know if that's when the short came out. And when was it then later redistributed as a theatrically length film?
USA, 1974, Filmex LA, and then the 9th of February, 1979 in West Germany after that. So...
Yeah, it's a hard one. But I agree with you. I think, look, let's say Dark Star is acceptable.
All right, fine.
Actually, we can take this two ways. Because the reason why I was looking at it was because...
I was about to trump you with that afterwards.
No, because I agree with you. Because I think John Carpenter is a really, really good choice.
Because my argument to that is, even if you want to outright that, he did Assault on Precinct 13.
Followed by Halloween.
So, I win either way.
Yeah, and that I was about to say, and that was the point that I was, because I was so hoping to get Halloween onto this list. Because Halloween was, until, unfortunately, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 80s, Halloween was the most successful independent film ever made.
That was what I was going to come to.
At a budget of $900,000 and a worldwide take of $100 million, you can't beat these numbers, you know?
Well, come on, this was my argument. I can't beat Steven, Spielberg necessarily, but as an independent
release. But I'm going to agree with you either way, though, because I'm going to say as a sophomore director, to go from Dark Star, which I absolutely love, and for this to this day, if I ever feel sad, I put Dark Star on. Dark Star makes me smile, no matter when I watch Dark Star. So to go from Dark Star, and if you haven't seen Dark Star, people in the chat room or listeners, watch Dark Star. It is a very funny film. Very dated, but very funny film. To follow that with Assault on Precinct 13, which is a really amazingly tight film. But
the way that I look at it is this. It's like you've got Assault on Precinct 13 that, like you said, independent money-wise and so on and so forth. All that aside for a moment, great film. But then to step from that, where he's got this film which takes such a great independent amount of money, and then step to Halloween.
Defining a genre.
Which exactly defines everything that was horror. Yeah. And defined the concept of slasher horror. Mm. It's like that, as I said in my review a while back, the Forgotten Films review of Friday the 13th, it's like you had that movie come out, and look, Friday the 13th probably solidly put it in its place. The slasher film became a genre, a born genre, which then became in cinemas everywhere. But it started from this man. So it doesn't matter which way you look at him. Yeah. John Carpenter.
There is actually argument that there is a slasher film that came before Halloween. One of our readers wrote into us about it, if somebody can remind me what it was. But I still don't think that defined it, because nobody saw it. The one that defined it was Halloween.
The one that hit everyone's mind. The one that was in the cinemas and on the tongues of everyone.
That reader review who wrote in and told us about this film we have to see. And I agree that that may have predated Halloween. But Halloween is the one that put it on the collective consciousness of everyone. Yeah. You know? I agree. I think John Carpenter is a fantastic choice. And either way you take it, I think it works.
Yep.
So either way, I think it works. And in fact, in some ways, you could argue that that actually does trump Spielberg, because it works either way. We can take yours twice.
Either way, it's a good first choice, and that's all that matters to me.
Absolutely. I think those are great lists. And look, it's a hard, this one took some work.
Yeah.
This is a hard one, because you had to do some research into these directors. I knew that Spielberg was going to hit the top of my list, and I almost had... I got to tell you, I almost had George Lucas on this list. And before anybody goes, George Lucas is a terrible director, he didn't used to be. If you remember, if you go back, his first three films, right?
Yeah.
And this is why I didn't make my list, because unless we had the punchline of Star Wars, then it wasn't going to work, really. Yeah. But his first film was THX-1138,
yeah,
a very interesting experimental science fiction film, very much along the lines of like a George Orwell nightmare, right? Interesting stuff. Failed at the box office, but an interesting film. He followed that with a film called American Graffiti. American Graffiti was phenomenally successful. In fact, the money he made off of American Graffiti is what funded half of Star Wars. A phenomenally successful film and a brilliant film. Great characters, great writing, great direction, tight, tight film. Great stuff. And a lot of people would say Why can't he do that anymore? I have no answer for that. All right. And then he follows American Graffiti with Star Wars. So you look at it and go, he's kind of on an honorary mentions list, because if you say THX1138, his sophomore film is American Graffiti, that's brilliance. Mm. So there's no way you can lose on that. Or if you take American Graffiti as his first major film, Star Wars is his sophomore film. So either way, you can't win. Then he didn't direct a film for 20 years and comes back and does the new Star Wars films. And you go, what the hell? What happened?
20 years can do a lot to people.
Yeah. Once again, that whole concept, you have to practice at things. He spent 20 years not directing a film, comes back and directs a huge film. He's out of practice, man. Yep. You know, you got to do some more work. Anyway, that's it. That's our lists. Whew. Okay. Get that out of our systems. Now, try and get back to my show notes here. That's it for our show today. We're going to get ourselves out of here. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say today, please send us email. Now, we have a new email address for you. All right. It's getting a little crazy with all this email. And we told you last time to, you know, make sure you tag it. And you guys were doing that. Very good. I'm going to make it even easier for you. If it's for the Geek Actually show, we've already said that on the show, you send it to feedback@geekactually.com. If it is for this show, send it to feedback@filmactually.com. All right, nice and easy. So feedback@filmactually.com is now registered, is now in active duty. You can send your feedback straight to this address. Okay? So feedback@filmactually.com is the address, or our voicemail line, as always, is 02-8011-3167. That is a Sydney number, and if you are outside of Sydney, you can just use Skype. Our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. You can get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, do all those wonderful things. Just go to geekactually.com, hit the follow us button, and you'll find us. For our other show, look for the title Geek Actually in iTunes, or you can find all the past episodes at geekactually.com. That is our tech and geeky culture kind of weird show that is kind of fun. This morning's show was a lot of fun. With all the mistakes and everything else impact, it's a lot of fun. Now, we have said before, we'll say it one more time, you can watch the show live. We go out usually at 12 p.m. On Saturday afternoons, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC+10. Go to geekactually.com/live. Join the chat room, have some fun, watch us live. Today we did go out very late because we had technical issues, as we've said. Now, we have a few friends that we'd like to shout out to. First of all, weekendronin.com is the home of therealjunkies.com. Not realjunkies.com. Get my face together again.
Oh, dude.
I was doing so well. I was on such a good roll. WeekendRonin.com is where it's the home for The Real Junkies, which is a movie podcast where they like to drink a lot of tequila and they review films just like us. And we disagree. They have a difference of opinion with us, which is good. You should always have lots of opinions to form an opinion. Remember, movies are subjective. Everybody has their own opinion, and it's good to hear everybody's opinion and then make up your own. Absolutely. All right. Also, reviewing films are The Funky Film Show. Rachel over at The Funky Film Show, Thursdays on Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM, or you can catch up past episodes on RadioFremantle.com. Damn Josh, right. I believe you run another show.
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. We're over there with all your knowledge on anything you might need to know about. Gaming-wise, we also have a bunch of interviews and stuff like that coming up very soon, and it will be awesome fun, so please go and check that out. And also make sure both me and Dave's show, you go onto iTunes and give us reviews.
Damn straight. Very nice. Couldn't have said that better myself.
Thank you.
We want to thank our artist, Josh Spencer, who created our lovely cover arts and logos for us over at attackninja.blogspot.com. Today, for our live listeners, you're not going to hear any music, unfortunately, because our live feed is all messed up. But for our audio listeners, the music we are going out on today is from Chris Bacon's score to Source Code. The track is the Source Code main titles. It's very Hitchcockian in style. I hope you enjoy it.
Yep.
At the end of that music, please stay around because Little Geek will be coming on. He's going to review Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, the second Diary of a Wimpy Kid film. So at the end of the music, we'll be back with Little Geek. So stick around for him. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we want to say thank you to our chat room, to Josh, to everybody. So thank you to everybody. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now. Okay, I'm now joined by Nicholas the Little Geek McVeigh. Hello! How are you? All right, so it's, wow, twice in two shows. This is not bad. Yeah. This is a good effort. Talking to your mic now. Yeah. All right, so we went to see over the school holidays Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules.
Yeah.
So this is the second in the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series.
Greg,
I'm not going in with a stain on my pants.
Fine.
Pooh! He's pooped his pants!
It's chocolate! See?
25th, Greg.
Did you drink all the soda?
Rowley.
This is what happens when we go to sleep. I'm never going to sleep ever again.
Fregley. Sharag. Patty.
Don't make me beat you up again.
Manny. Holly.
Hi, Fregley.
Sticks on Fregley.
It's gonna hurt.
And Roderick.
Get in.
In a whole new chapter of the wimpiest saga of all time.
I'm in the ladies.
It's about time, little bro.
Not you.
Learn the secrets to an easy life.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Roderick Rules.
Rule number one, always lower mom and dad's expectations.
I took a math test today and I'm pretty sure I flunked it.
Oh, Greg.
But look, I got a C minus.
At least you didn't fail.
I actually thought it was really good, like I usually do. I actually thought it was better than the first one.
Cool.
I mean, really better. And it's funny because in the first one, they actually were more faithful to the book.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually a bad thing because in the book, it's kind of all about him because it's his diary, of
course. Right, right.
But that doesn't really translate well into film, and it feels like a little bit of an ass.
Yeah, I found the first film a little bit episodic.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like little bitsies and little things happening all the time, but it wasn't a coherent storytelling. And I agree with you. I think the second one is actually a better film because it actually has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It actually has a cohesive story. I also have to say that I actually didn't like the character. What's the character's name, the boy?
Greg.
Greg. I didn't actually like the character of Greg in the first movie. I found him a little bit obnoxious, actually, because it was all about trying to be loved and trying to be wanting to be seen and all this sort of stuff. And I liked him better in the second film.
Yeah.
I thought he was a more sympathetic character in the second film.
Yeah, he was.
I also really liked the parents.
Yeah, they actually had a better roles in this part. This one. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the parents were actually very funny in this film. Whereas in the first film, they were kind of relegated to the background.
Yeah.
And I thought the parents were better in this one. So overall, are you going to recommend this to your friends?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you think that's now, question. Do you need to see the first one to see the second one? No, I didn't think so either. I think you can pretty much pick it up right from the second one if you want to. I don't think it's going to win any awards. I don't think it's a brilliant film.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I actually found myself having a lot of fun.
Spoilers just for a little tiny minute. Remember that part where they had the whole party and everything?
Yep.
But then they had to switch the doors around and their door actually had a lock? and then his dad thought he was going crazy because he thought...
Didn't this door have a lock? For Delta Knight in our chat room, the movie is called Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules.
Yeah.
Has anybody in our chat room seen the Diary of a Wimpy Kid films? We'll wait for them. There was a bit of a lag on the, on the live stream. So overall, you would recommend this film to your friends?
I would. Especially my friend because he really loves Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Now, if people don't have kids, is this going to be for them?
No.
No. Okay, so if you don't have kids, you might not get much out of it. But if you have kids, then you might get something from this.
Or teenagers. They might like it too. Something
now, Mike from Canada says, but his students like the film.
Yeah.
So his students are obviously getting something out of the film. So, yeah, look, Nicholas has been really, really big on the books for some time.
Yeah, actually, another spoiler, sorry. Mm-hmm. Holly in the film, Holly Hills, mm-hmm. she's like the romantic relationship. Nothing ever happened between them two in the book.
Oh, okay. So they've kind of built that up.
In the book, the last thing about it was when she called him in Frigley.
Right. Oh, is that the end of their relationship?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, because that goes on a lot more in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, there you go. So there you go. The adaptation is a little bit more detailed, mm-hmm. it would seem. I also really like the actor who plays the brother. Yeah. I think he is actually quite funny.
Yeah.
I love there's a sequence in the film where he's teaching Greg how to slack off and how to get away with stuff. And that's actually quite cute as well. So, yeah, no, look, overall, not a bad film. I think that it's not going to be, I mean, for adults who are childless and you're not into kids' films, and you could probably catch up with this on TV or on DVD or something like that. But if you've got kids, it's a good film to take them to.
Yeah.
Why not? What the hell? You get something out of it.
Yeah.
You know? So overall, good.
Yeah, good.
Excellent. All right, what's up on the world of NikkiMcVeigh.com or your YouTube?
Oh, yeah. Well, at the moment, I am working on a Lego Batman. I'm actually very busy at the moment. I'm working on a Lego Batman collaborative project
mm-hmm.
With lots of other animators.
Right.
And pretty much any animator could do a story for it. It's kind of a bit like Gotham Knights, that film.
Right. Yeah. So you're creating an anthology short stories, and you're inviting people to animate stories for it. So if you are a Lego animator and you listen to this show, he's already put it up. Go to youtube.com/NikkiMcVeigh.
Yeah.
And there's a video up, text video, which explains what's going on.
Yeah.
And you're still looking for submissions at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great,
and excellent. Also, I've been working on lots of different projects, as I said before.
Mm.
I'm working downstairs while the show was actually going. I was actually working on a Sarah Jane tribute.
Oh, yes, because Sarah Jane, Elizabeth Sladen died,
And I'm also, of course, working on that Smile film that is taking
a long time to get off the ground. But yeah, it'll all be worthwhile in the end.
Yeah.
It'll all be worthwhile in the end. All right, well, we're going to have to sign off because, as I said at the head of the show, it is my lovely wife Katie's and your mother's birthday.
Yeah.
And we've got some stuff to organize for that. So we're going to say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye,
thank
guys.
Thank you, chat room, for hanging around with us during this last little edition. And we'll see, we'll catch you next time another kids film comes out, yeah?
Yep. Or the superhero
or
films.
X-Men. I think the X-Men's the next one out, so we'll probably bring you in for X-Men. Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see the next.
When's Super 8 coming out?
Super 8 is... Oh, actually, that might be even next. Who knows? We'll see. Well, the next major geek film that is Nicholas-related, he'll come back on the show again.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Nicholas.
Thank you.
And we'll say goodbye to everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.